Hi, welcome to the Audio Engineering Podcast with me, Streaky, and...
And me, Shay.
And today we're going to be discussing low-end theory. Not really low-end theory, but it's just that's what a Tribe Called Quest album was, so it sounded like a good title. But
yeah, just talking about low-end, really, isn't it?
Talking about low-end and how I deal with it in mastering, what I liked, how I like to get it, and how Shay likes to deliver it.
Pretty much, yeah. How I produce with low end and how I mix with low end, pretty much.
Yeah, so you get cracking because then we'll start from...
Yeah, so start from production, yeah?
Yeah, and then work through.
I think low end in production is one of the most important things, other than just being creative. Making sure that you've got enough low end at production stage is vital to make sure that you've got enough low end in your final stage. Bass is probably one of the hardest things I find to deal with when producing. For me personally, because I make bass-led music, like I make drum and bass, I make bass-heavy music. The bass is 75% of the importance of my tracks most of the time. So it's kind of making sure everything works around the bass. Now, a lot of people are going to be saying things like, well, that's the wrong way to think about it. But because it's drum and bass, it's drums and it's bass. Like, my bass needs to be tight, needs to be central.
But then you also, it's not just that, if you're in a studio recording, a lot of the times, yeah, you'll lay down the sort of rough demo to get to record somebody,
yeah.
But then you'll do the drums and the bass first, won't you, to get those, they're kind of the foundations of any track. So even without drum and bass, you're kind of making sure you get the low end recorded and down before you start adding leads and things like that.
Yeah.
Am I right in saying that? I mean, that's my experience from recording.
Definitely right. I mean, normally, yeah, like you say, it's the drummer and the bassist that play together just to get the groove of the track. But in terms of like synthesis or like electronic music production, like what I do, a lot of the time I spend a lot of the time on the bass, like because I design all my basses. I don't like go for presets or anything. I make basses from synthesizers, from samples sometimes, from like literally vocal samples. I'll sample them, time stretch them, pitch them down and turn them into bass lines. So you get like a nice timbre from it, which is something that I suggest people try if they've not done it before. But yeah, the spending most of my time on the bass means that everything else in just by default should really work around it, because I've got that in mind when I'm making the bass. Like, I want my bass to take up a certain area. There's areas of my bass that I will cut completely out of production stage, because I know I'm going to probably end up having to cut it at mix, and I'm dead certain you're going to probably be cutting it or tightening it up at master. So I'll be sorting those areas out in production stage.
Right, already considering the mastering stage when you're producing.
Of course, yeah, I'm already considering the final product. I've not got that in mind. I'm not letting it hinder my creativity, but it's always in the back of my mind. Like, I'm not going to be adding 7 dB at 200 hertz, for instance, in my bass, because I know that's not a good move to do in production stage, mix stage, or mastering stage. It's going to have to be taken out. So I'm going to make it meaty in the low end, in the sub end. I'm going to make it meaty in the lower mids, but still clean and clear within those low mids. So when it comes to mixing, I haven't got a problem. My kick's going to sit with the bass nicely. The low synths are going to sit with the bass nicely. And then when it goes finally to you to master, I know that you're not going to listen to it and go, oh, what, like, oh right, okay, yeah. And it's a salvage
cut this to bits,
yeah, and you're salvaging something like you can't polish a turd, old saying. You can put glitter on a piece of shit, but it's glitter underneath the shit, isn't it?
It's shit underneath the glitter,
that's what I mean. Yeah other way around, yeah.
But so I would say when you're listening to the bass, then I always like it if somebody gives me a little bit more bass than they do top.
Okay.
So yeah. I've got more of a balance. If you think of a seesaw, the more of the seesaw balances up in the low end rather than the high end.
I mean, is that because you prefer to take away in mastering than add?
Yeah. I do add. No, I do like to add, but I also, it's nice. If you're adding on, it's like adding pieces to clay. To clay model, they weren't part of the original mold, so you're kind of bolting on. Yeah. So you're bringing up a load of waffle and making things that aren't there really.
Yeah.
Where with top end, it's totally different because you can add top and it just adds air and stuff to the track. I mean, obviously, if it's super hissy track, you don't want to add too much, but you can still open things up more, and that gives an instant. You know, you can do that, and if you're the reason why I do that is because I'm using really nice analog EQ. So I would say it's better to do it for me to do it with analog stuff than someone to do it in the box, because I'm going to get them a better sound.
It's not that, it's just the experience as well. It's like, you know, you know the gear, but you just know what you're doing with it more than someone maybe at production stage. If they choose to master their own track, they might not have the knowledge or the experience to know what to lift and how much.
Well, if we're talking top end, although we're supposed to be talking about the bottom end, the top end, if they start adding a digital EQ onto it, that's going to, okay, there's some out there that sound okay, but most of the time you're going to make things sound thin and very digital sounding by adding a load of high end EQ.
Yeah.
And you might end up adding too much and then it gets really tizzy. And so you have to have that balance. And by using analog DSs and analog EQs, you can do it in a really smooth, natural way without it sounding hard. And especially when you turn things up to a high volume, which you might not be able to do in certain studios, home studios, for example, or small production rooms. So you need to be able to turn up so that when it's really loud, it's still sounding really smooth and really nice. And that's a very hard balance to get. And I would, going back to bass, say it's pretty much the same thing. If you've got too much low end on, it's going to get very boomy.
Yeah.
But the good thing about that is I can use multi-band EQs to crush that together. There is a video that I've done on YouTube, which is how I tighten up low end. So, yeah. You know, you can chop into it a bit. You know, you can start carving out the low end a little bit more if you've got a lot of bottom end to play with from the mix. And when I say a lot, though, I don't mean a lot. It's like I don't mean it to be boomy and horrible, because then I'm then fighting it. But just to have a touch more low end, and you know, a lot of mastering engineers will say don't do a low cut, don't cut off the bottom end with a filter. They say cut it off before it comes to mastering.
Yeah.
Where I think the opposite. I would rather it was left, because people can't hear down to 20 hertz in their room.
Yeah.
And if I can cut it at 20 hertz, it's not going to get rid of the kick drum, and I can really then tighten up the kick and get it really firing. So I think it's best, if in doubt, leave it for the mastering engineer, or leave it for the mix engineer if you're going to a decent mix engineer.
Yeah, I mean, until that last bit, I was going to say I disagree, but like until the last bit, yeah, I understand what you're saying. If in doubt, leave it in, not leave it out. If in doubt, leave it in. But I'm always in a mix. I always low cut it, because if I'm using things like compression, like I said before, when we spoke about what comes first in a mix bus chain, my first thing in a mix bus chain is an EQ, and the first thing I do in that EQ is I low cut, and it's going to be.
Yeah, but that's through experience that you do that. I'm talking about if somebody doesn't have a load of experience. It's like, don't cut it off, because you might cut something off that you need, especially in drum and bass.
Yeah.
If you start cutting at 20 hertz, that changes the whole sound of the track totally.
And
you're better off leaving it. I've had many a row with drum and bass boys when I'm cutting vinyl for them, and I'll put a low cut on at, or a high pass, should I say, and it's, you know, they're getting the right hump because it's taking off some of the really low stuff that we'll play with the club. So that's where I learned my lesson.
But still, I mean, even then, it's because, like I say, that the order of plugins, if I'm going to be compressing something, if there is something that I can't hear on my speakers, like you say, down at 23 hertz or something, that's like going for it hard, but there's no possible way of me hearing it in the environment that I'm in at production stage. If I put a compressor on after that, that compressor is not going to be like, that compressor isn't in the room with me. That compressor is a digital plugin that's going to see that frequency and just adapt to that frequency, which means that if it sees 7 plus dB at 23 hertz, it's going to start pulling that down before everything else, which means that all the other frequencies, if it's just a stereo compressor, all the other frequencies are going to be at liberty to what my 23 hertz is doing. So for utility wise, I've just cut it out, even if I can't hear it. But again, I suppose it just comes down to the experience.
Yeah, but also a lot of that is, even if you're on small speakers, you can still, even if you're cutting at 20 hertz and or if you're putting a compressor on that low, you can still hear that. You can still feel that.
Hmm.
In the small speakers, it's still, I know you can't actually hear it, but you do in a way. It's kind of, because it's going to affect what's happening in the higher ranges of around 100 and stuff.
Yeah.
So you're going to automatically know, okay, I'll cut that. And then suddenly the compressor will jump into life and start working on the higher frequencies.
Yeah.
So then you kind of know that's how that's going to be. And that's just trial and error over a period of time to learn your speakers and learn your room, and then learn, okay, well, when I put a 20, you know, do some tests with some different bass lines and stuff and start putting cuts in and see how that's making the compressors react. Maybe use a multi-band and you can see what's going on. I mean, I've used the Fab Filter multi-band, which is quite nice, and you can actually see what's going on in the low end, go quite low and sort of tidy that up with a multiband, can't you, in the mix.
Yeah, I think one of the best things that you taught me about two, three years ago now was you can generally change the whole sound of a track just by tweaking the bass of it. You can change the how the highs sound, how the mids sound, just by tweaking a few bits around in the bass, just with EQ. And at the time, I remember you saying it, I was like, bollocks, that's not, no. But then you did it, and it was like, wow, like tightening the low end up, a little bit of a cut in the low end, two or three dB.
But that goes back to what I was saying about the seesaw effect. If you've got a little bit more in the low end, if you can start trimming that up, there's no actual need for you to move the top end.
Yeah.
And so the trick that somebody, the thing that people do that haven't got much experience, I'm not trying to big myself up, but if you haven't got that much experience and you're not as old as me, you're more likely to, instead of chopping into the bass because you're scared, you're more likely to add a load of top. So your bass is still having troubles and it's not going to be as tight as it could be, but your top is suddenly sounding nicer and you've got done that cheap mastering effect where you've gone, okay, I've added 3 dB on at 10K shelf. And suddenly I've balanced the track up again. So you think you're done.
Yeah.
But really, you don't need to add that top end. By adding top end, you've added more tiz, more sizz and whatever.
More thinness.
And it doesn't sound as smooth when it's turned up loud, as I was saying earlier.
Yeah.
So you're better off concentrating on the low end, getting that really right, getting it right with the balance of the track. And then everything, suddenly the top end sounds totally different. Like you say, the mids suddenly open up because the compressors are working different across the track.
Yeah.
If you put a compressor across it, suddenly the mids are working and you're starting to hear the bottom of the snare and starting to hear the snap of the snare, where before it's kind of masked by all this kind of bassy waffle, which you can trim into.
I think that bass is one of the best things. Oh, sorry. Analog gear is one of the best things for bass. Like the difference between analog equipment and digital plugins on bass is vast compared to, say, mid-range and top. Like using hardware, analog hardware EQs on bass is, I've found, 100% better than just using a plugin, for instance. And it could be a really nice plugin, FabFilter Pro Q, an emulation plugin. You don't get that thickness and that warmth out of like a valve EQ than you do.
But I find that across the whole range.
Oh, of course, yeah. But
top end mids and low mids and everything doesn't sound as good with unless an analog EQ is involved. But
I mean, analog's going to sound better across the board.
But everybody doesn't have that luxury, unfortunately. Yeah. So I would say if you haven't got that luxury, you've got to try and just be as careful as you can and go lightly on stuff, especially when you know it's a digital EQ and it's going to start thinning out and it's going to start sounding edgy. You'd be better off to use a couple of them and cut things or do certain things in a certain way to maybe the low end. I mean, as I say, I think using a compressor on the low end can help a lot straight away, and doing a couple of EQ, you know, like you say, cutting very low at say 20 hertz.
Yeah.
And then also maybe doing a cut around 160, that can help as well. But that depends how much bass you've got there in that area, because 160 around the area can clean up the sound, but it can also take away quite a lot.
You've really got to watch
that. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's another cheap trick, really, cutting at 160, 100, like, because it instantly sounds good to your ear. But the more you listen, the more you realize you're losing low end of the vocal, low end of the snare.
Weight.
Yeah, you're losing those kind of low mids that really, I think, are probably more as important as the bottom end. Yeah. I think the low mids, if you get low mids right, that's where all the feel is. That's where all the sound, you know, there's so much going on there. You can really get a song sounding good if you get your low mids right.
I mean, going back to what we were saying before, when you were saying about not everyone's got the chance to use the analog gear. Literally, I've just looked, like I'm at work, I've just looked to the left and like there's a TL Audio Valve EQ here. And I used to have one. And I got one for £120 off eBay. And it's a stereo dual mono. So two channel stereo valve EQ. And you can get them on eBay for like 150 quid now, where you can swap out the valves. And that on a mix bus is 100 times better than just the standard EQ. Tiny little bit of dB here and there. Nice tight EQ.
My only problem with that is if you're going out of the box, you're suddenly getting into A to D, D to A territory.
Oh,
and so then, you're in a world of leads, noise floor. It opens you up to so many things that for the sake of that 100 quid EQ that you've just popped across, you've done your whole mix in because you don't, you haven't got the right other stuff that goes along with it.
But then you get to touch knobs in there.
I think if you're in the box, you're in the box. Just, I think you're better off staying in the box. Most big mix engineers are in the box. I think you're better off just finding the stuff that works for you and finding out the best possible EQs that are going to work, and you don't have to work them hard. I think if you're better off using, you know, in the same way that I use limiters, you're probably better off using two or three EQs rather than one if you're going to have to do a lot of work with that EQ.
Yeah.
And really, you shouldn't have to do a lot of work with the EQ, because if you've been recording it right and you've got a really lovely chain going in, as you're saying, then just mixing in the box, you should be able to get quite a good sound.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the stuff, I mean, we obviously know you're a big Slate fan, but his stuff's, you know, strap a few of his stuff across it, it's, you know...
Fake analog, mate. It's like the closest thing to analog sound. Like I go on about it all the time, but the new Valve preamp the new Valve console little things in the virtual mix rack are amazing. Like, just putting it into a mix is just like you've just chucked money at it.
I basically answered the question from before, because you're better off using that than you are using a bit of analog equipment just for the hell of it, because you know you're probably going to be able to get a nearly decent sound. And if you then pump it out to a mastering engineer who's in the analog world, then they're going to add a load more depth and flavor and warmth to it, even just by running it through their desk. You know, running it through a great set of A to D's, D to A's, and then putting it through a lovely desk with a few little valve bits here and there, maybe. It's going to sound all right.
Yeah,
you know, it's going to sound all right because it's going to add that depth and warmth in.
Yeah.
And most mastering engineers, I don't know any that are in the box.
Full in the box, yeah, I know, yeah.
I don't know any, really. So I know there's loads of kids that are doing tracks for a tenner or whatever, but that's not real mastering. That's just...
sticking a limiter on it.
That's not mastering, that's just blagging.
Yeah.
So... you know, if everyone you see has got analog gear, so sling it out to a mastering engineer and you're done. Yeah, okay, you need to go.
Did I put you off there?
No, it's all right. Well, because I'm just rambling now. All right, well, let's wrap it up there. Shay needs to go because he's got a classroom full of people that are waiting to hear his nonsense.
My dulcet tones.
So we'll speak to you next week, hopefully. Thanks for listening. Please tell your friends about this. If you've got anybody that's into audio, let them know. Share this on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, MySpace.
Follow the YouTube channels.
Yeah, if you can subscribe to mine and Shay's YouTube channels, that'll be excellent. Mm-hmm. And there's more rubbish on there for you to wrap your ears around. Thanks for listening.
Listening, yeah, no one's watching this.
And until next time, thank you, goodbye.
Later.